Welcome back to Off the Hour here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are joined in studio and by phone now by a panel of guests who will be discussing climate change, the tar sands, and pipelines. This past Tuesday marked Earth Day, and in just over 2 weeks, dozens of citizens and community groups will be embarking on a 700-kilometer walk across Quebec to denounce oil and gas pipelines. The action is called the People's March for Mother Earth, and will begin May 10th in Kakuna in the Lower Saint-Laurent region, make its way through dozens of communities, including Montreal, before ending in Kanishakti's Mohawk community around June 14th. Along the way, they will be sharing and educating communities about the impacts of major proposed pipelines such as Enbridge Land 9B and TransCanada's Energy East. Joining us now in studio, we have Jesse Kerr. Jesse is one of the organizers for People for Mother Earth and is one of the individuals walking the whole 34 days. Jesse is originally from British Columbia, where they were involved in numerous protests and demonstrations for the environment, specifically against Enbridge and the Northern Gateway pipeline. Audrey is a climate justice organizer with the groups Climate Justice Montreal and Coalition Vigilance Oleoduc. Patrick is with Greenpeace Canada and has been engaging in actions and campaigns against the Alberta tar sands for several years. And joining us by phone, we have Vanessa Gray. Vanessa is a youth activist from the Owingin First Nations Reserve near Sarnia in what is known as Ontario's Chemical Valley. She is a tireless activist for First Nations land defense and against Enbridge Line 9 reversal proposal. Vanessa, are you with us?
I am.
Okay, I was hoping to start with you. Just generally, what are some of the ways Indigenous communities across Canada are opposing tar sands and pipelines?
So here in Chenang, we are currently bringing awareness to a particular pipeline called Line 9. This pipeline travels across Ontario from Sarnia to Montreal. And so it passes along our reserve, where it's just a road in between us and this pipeline where they want to reverse it, and where tar sands oil will potentially flow. And so putting the focus on Enbridge and how it is not held reliable for the spills that have happened in the past, including the Kalamazoo spill in Michigan, where the identical pipeline 6B exploded and tar sands are oil is still not cleaned up. Many people died from that. And so that same pipeline also travels along our reserve. And so bringing the awareness to this one pipeline opens up the doors to many different issues that we are facing, including not just the pipelines, but the tar sands in general, where the extraction process is also affecting Indigenous people in Alberta. And we also don't have to just worry about one way of transporting the oil. It is also by train, by truck, and by boat, too. They want to get this oil out as much as they can. And so all of these ways are dangerous and could affect our health in the worst way. So what we're doing is we're holding teach-ins for the community to understand why it is that we oppose the tar sands and these pipeline projects so much. We have been doing toxic tours for just over a year now. We've been asking people to come to Amgenong and see what the front line really looks like, because here we are surrounded by 63 high-emitting facilities, where we share a fence line with companies like Enbridge and Shell and Suncor, who have terrible reputations regarding spills and the communities that are in the area of their extraction process and their refining process. And so our health is clearly, and our environment are clearly affected here. So actions like that around awareness are things that we have been doing to take steps forward in taking action against these projects.
I'm really interested in the fact that, you know, your community is being affected so specifically and so intensely, but that there's always been a strong Indigenous presence in movements of environmental protectionism. I was wondering, for you, how can the First Nations struggle uniquely add to the environmental movement as a whole?
I don't know if the Indigenous movement has always been so strong in the environmental movement. I've always found it to be, and it still is, quite non-Indigenous based. But I think now we see a lot of communities and nations working together with these issues that affect us similarly, but not exactly the same way. We can relate with each other with how we are all being poisoned. That's for sure, but we are also connecting with our traditions, and I think we have been trying to meet with different nations, like across Canada, where last summer we met with Unist'ot'en folks. This spring I met with folks out east, and so I think we're just trying to build those bridges between us right now, And I think a lot of what the Indigenous movement is looking like as is exactly the again, away from the extraction process and making our many, many issues strong with one voice type of thing, is what we're trying to do.
Great. So yeah, now I'd like to open it up to the rest of our panel. Just a very general question I'm going to throw out. What are the major pipeline developments that currently occupy your resistance movement? So there's Tar Sands, Enbridge Line 9, and you know, why should people really care about these?
There's a lot of reasons why people should care. I think living in Montreal, there's different reasons because it will really affect, chances that are, the pipelines will really affect the water quality. The pipeline Line 9 crosses three main rivers on its way to Montreal. That's a thing to be worried about, but also the refinery in Montreal will definitely affect the air quality. And Montreal's already a city with air quality, so it's just going to make it worse. But also, it's to stand in solidarity with other people, like Vanessa mentioned, that are directly affected earlier in the extraction process of the tar sands and along the pipeline. And then for TransCanada, also, this is another big project that will cross a province, and same reasons, water, air, but also it's just adding more oil to the system, more fossil fuel that will be burned, so contributing definitely to climate change. Mm-hmm.
So maybe, Patrick, you could answer this one. At the center of the controversy relating to Line 9, it's bitumen and the new danger that this brings. How does this differ from regular oil, and why is it important?
Well, there's many things. First, you have to understand that when we're talking about oil from the tar sands, this is not conventional oil. This is probably the dirtiest oil on Earth for a simple reason. It's because it takes so much energy to extract the oil from the bitumen that it does pollute three to four times more to produce tar sands or oil from the tar sands compared to conventional oil. So it does emit much more GHG for the production, and this is why tar sand is so dirty. And on top of that, obviously, you have all the other impacts on the water in Alberta, on the air quality in Alberta, on the boreal forest in Alberta, on the First Nation territory in Alberta, with the problem, health problem they can have related with the expansion of the tar sand. But this oil, if you look at this oil, it's also problematic for when it does travel under as a dilbit, we call it dilbit. It's diluting bitumen. It's definitely it's a way to make sure that you can move that oil in the pipeline. So you dilute the bitumen with a condensate, which is mainly like natural gas. And in case of a spill, then you have that natural gas that it does evaporate, with obviously high risk for the health of the people that could be nearby a spill. And then also you have that bitumen, which is more viscous and more heavier than light oil. And that bitumen will necessarily fall at the bottom of the water in case of a spill in a river. So this is what we've seen in Kalamazoo with the oil going at the seabed of the river, and then you cannot remove that oil. You have to dig up the seabed or the riverbed, and obviously after 3 years and a half, almost 4 years, they are still cleaning that mess in Kalamazoo in Michigan, which was a spill of dilbit. So they are a huge issue for the local communities, for their health, for the environment in case of a spill. And on top of that, you need to realize that why we see those type of project is because they want to expand the production of the tar sands, and they need means to transport and to allow that expansion. And now they're seeing a bottleneck in Alberta. So they need more pipelines, they need more train. Any way they can, they want to get the oil out of there and reach new market, reach international market. So by allowing those projects to go forward, those pipelines, we're also complicit of the expansion of the tar sand, which is the main source of GHG emission, the main source of increasing of GHG emission in Canada.
You know, the transmission of this oil is also kind of at the center of this controversy. Some people advocate that pipelines are some of the safest way to move oil, because think of the rail disaster we had here in Quebec last year. You know, what would you say to those people?
Well, first, pipeline also have risks. There's no way of transporting oil that is safe. And when maybe there's less spills with pipelines, but when there's a spill, there's more oil being spilled. So that's also something to have in mind. And the issue is not to say which transportation system is the safest, but let's say we shouldn't transport oil and we should move towards other sources of energy that have fewer environmental impacts.
Mm-hmm. Kind of aside from the environmental impacts, I think it's interesting to discuss what you guys think the most pressing political, economic, and social impacts that this sort of activism addresses. So kind of what's the social cost?
Well, it's obvious that the first social cost is definitely in Alberta, where you see the First Nation. During 1 year, there's more or less 80% of their traditional territory they are using that is not anymore available to hunt, to fish, because of the tar sand expansion, because of the expansion of the mines, because of the new projects coming on. There's also a huge health issue for them, having over 11 million of litter spilling from the different tar sands. Tar sands pound, or water pound, dirty pound, chemical water, that you see in Alberta. So there's obviously a huge impact for those community. And all along the pipeline, you need to realize that communities are now facing new risk. Now they are facing new risk because of an increase of the transport of oil that we didn't have before. And the only reason still that we have those type of new risk is because the oil company and the government, the upper government, they want to expand the production of the tar sands. And now, and this is only for the profit of the company, and we don't see any benefits in terms of job creation, or maybe a few jobs would be created along the pipeline. But this is definitely not the type of economy where we should be turning and we should be aiming at in Canada. And what we need is a real transition. And now we are getting deeper into a highly oil-dependent economy that we should get rid of, instead of being at the first place in the world in terms of position for the green economy that we are seeing growing and that we need to grow as quickly as possible. So there are huge impact of getting deeper into a highly dependent oil dependent economy.
Jesse, I was wondering if I could ask you a question about what you feel these new responses by the environmental activist community are to the new risks that Patrick discussed.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So what are some responses that you've been taking to address these new risks that these pipelines pose?
Yeah, the march in specific is trying to focus on all the communities that are going to be affected, and specifically by Energy East and Line 9. So in passing through those communities and communicating with the activists and the people and the community members there about how they're impacted and how they want to resist the pipelines. Mm-hmm. We've seen the impacts everywhere, and as Vanessa talked about in her own community, and we're only waiting until it's going to happen again. We're only waiting for it to happen again for Energy East. So, trying to really focus on building that solidarity and building that movement. Mm-hmm.
So this panel was really convened around the fact that, you know, you're participating in this march. So I was wondering if you could give a little background about the march for peoples for Mother Earth, and what you hope to accomplish with the march.
Yeah, sorry. So it's a 34-day march that starts from Kakuna to Kinisataki. It walks all along the proposed route of Energy East and part of Line 9. The goal is to bring attention within these communities and in the wider community of Quebec and Canada about the issue around Energy East and pipelines and the fossil fuel industry in general. Part of our goal is to communicate with the community members in specific and create links between resistance movements all over Quebec and all along the line. So one of the kind of conversations that's been happening over the last couple of years is that there's not links. There's people fighting within their individual communities, but there's no links to the wider issue, and there's no links between these communities that feel like part of their issue is fighting alone. And that comes from the Indigenous groups, from environmental groups all over as well. So we really want to create those links and build a network of resistance all across the Energy East pipeline, and really at the same time bring people into that movement and bring people into the campaigns building in these communities.
So these communities, I know you're going to be visiting a lot of communities on your walk.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the ways that you're hoping to educate and mobilize these communities that you visit?
We're hoping to like work with the local groups that are all along the pipeline as well. So Stop Oleoduc is one. They're launching a campaign, Kulpashe Nu. So we're going to work with these community groups as well as host shows in the evenings or workshops and events on different issues around the pipelines and try to get people involved and entertain them as well, create parades and demonstrations that people can join in on and feel some connection to.
Great. So I actually found it interesting. The name of this march is kind of significant. Why have you decided to call it Peoples for Mother Earth as opposed to any other sort of title you could have had for this march?
Yeah, the name took a long time and a lot of discussion and debate around it. But eventually we decided to not stand in opposition to something necessarily with our name, but to go towards something that we wanted, a positive title and something. Yeah, we're all here to protect Mother Earth, and that's the base of all. I think the environmental movement in general is not necessarily that we're against pipelines and tar sands. That's all part of the grander scale, but the basis is that we want to protect nature and in our essence Mother Earth, and we kind of took that energy from the indigenous languages and communications around our Mother Earth.
Right. So we're going to be taking a quick break, but we will be right back with our panel about the Peoples for Mother Earth March in just a bit. So we are back with our panel on the Peoples for Mother Earth March and pipelines and tar sands in general. I'm here with Audrey Yank, Patrick Bonin. Joining us by phone is Vanessa Gray, and we also have Jesse Kerr. So one question that I kind of wanted to ask all of you was, we previously discussed some of the political, economic, and social impacts that pipelines can have, but what I kind of wanted to get at was what has been the response by the government and the people and energy companies to resistance efforts in terms of general response or economic response?
Well, for sure, like what we've seen is an unprecedented big chunk of lobbyists going into Quebec City, where we have obviously the National Assembly, and lobbying the government to promote that type of new project, like new project of tar sands pipeline coming into Quebec, and trying to convince that we need it, that if we don't get it, then we'll go bankrupt, kind of conclusion they came to. But obviously, there's a lot of money on the table for the oil company, for the refinery company, and the only reason why they are pushing so hard for those type of project is that they need to get the oil out of Alberta, that they are blocked south in the U.S. That you might have heard of the Keystone XL pipeline project that has been on hold and that Obama might reject. It's the same case with the Northern Gateway pipeline, which is another pipeline starting from Alberta going that would go west to the west coast of British Columbia, and that is blocked in British Columbia. And you see over 130 communities rejected that type of project. And so the pipeline company and the upper government is just looking at every type of new possible way to get and route to get the oil out of Alberta. And this is why we're seeing this coming into Quebec. And this is why they are investing so much money in either publicity campaign, either lobbying, because they are losing money at the moment, not being able to sell the oil. And keep in mind that they want to double the tar sands production by 2020, and they want to triple it by 2035. So they need more pipelines, they need more train, and it's a matter of big bucks for big oil. And this is why the issue won't stop here, because they know that they need to get that oil on the market as soon as possible, before we get into serious climate change policy that we don't have with the Harper government. But if we're serious about fighting climate change, there's no way we can expand the tar sand. It's just impossible. If we need to reduce GHG emission, as we do, as the science is telling us, then we need to keep that oil under the ground. And the oil company knows that, so that's why they want to just get it out of the ground as soon as possible.
You know, these are big companies, big, powerful energy companies. And I was wondering, Vanessa, if you can give us some of the organizational approaches that you've used to oppose the pipeline and some of the efforts made by these companies.
The efforts made by the company? Sorry, could you...
In terms of building new pipelines, their work with tar sands and all of that.
Okay, well, I guess more, I'll stick to line 9. I think there are a few communities looking for an environmental assessment for line 9, because what Enbridge did was held hearings for parts of the pipeline instead of doing an entire environmental assessment on the whole pipeline. So they focused on parts of it, and now and so they were trying to go around having to do that assessment, but once the hearings for the second section was happening in Toronto, there was a lot of resistance from the Indigenous communities, I guess you can, green groups and NGOs all stood up against this whole process of approving this pipeline through the National Energy Board, And it's beginning to be obvious that they're getting to be a bit desperate with transporting the oil through like a line like pipeline, like this Line 9 pipeline, because it is over 30 years old, about 40 years old, and it wasn't built for this type of oil. This is why we saw this Kalamazoo incident happening with this other Enbridge pipeline, 6B, where that pipeline could not hold this type of oil. And skipping steps and saving money and cutting corners by using older pipelines for this newer oil is not working out. And Line 9 is exactly like this other pipeline that has already spilled. So this needs an environmental assessment. In fact, this oil cannot be in this pipeline because it will spill. And I guess the question is not will it spill, it's when it will spill and where it will happen. And it's not just Indigenous people who are facing the front line anymore. It's everybody. Nobody is safe from the tar sands spilling and contaminating the environment around you. It is definitely everyone who's at risk. And so the tactic of using old pipelines for bitumen is definitely something being pushed, but it is not working out, and especially when they are trying to go around environmental assessment.
So what sort of alternatives could you see the Canadian government and energy producers taking to this sort of old pipeline recycling?
It's the problem goes far beyond just the old pipeline. I think it also goes around free and prior informed consent, where this where there is no consent going on with these projects, there is no consent, and so this creates the issue of the lack of awareness of what is happening and why this is happening, why are we put at risk now. Some these companies consider consent to be showing up in our community with a table maybe for an hour or two and then saying, okay, well, we consented with this community. We still don't even have consent. And so the issue is even is way beyond the old pipelines issue. And so I think consent is a good way to start.
Do you think the sort of grassroots approach that a lot of Indigenous communities have taken to this opposition to pipelines not only involves that sort of informed consent, but really adds to the democratic process that is needed and that you've described?
I think my position with the group I work with and the work I've been doing on my own is with the Indigenous youth. I think it's one thing to have that that communication with band councils and elected officials, but this pipeline oil sands issue is not so much as an issue of today and tomorrow, but it's I think it's a future thing to look at and where we are leaving our children and their future. And so where I see that youth don't have that understanding that this is not just a pipeline that might have jobs available, like short-term jobs available, and how like this is not building the economy, but this is also putting future generations at risk.
Great. So I wanted to open it back up. Actually, I have a question for Jesse. So going back to the march, This is a long march. This is a 34-day march. This is something you don't see every day, you know. How do you feel this sort of approach where, you know, you're going weeks and weeks and you're encountering all these different communities is especially important when you contrast it with, you know, another approach that might just have one big protest one day and then they're done?
I think it's just one in many forms and tactics that need to be taken. I don't think that there's necessarily any one anti-pipeline or opposition group that has a better tactic than the other. We chose to take this tactic to really connect communities, and why we chose to walk. There's a ton of people biking through these routes as well. You've heard of people taking horses, but we really chose to walk and embrace the idea of that slow pace that we should be taking instead of rushing to flow energy everywhere and taking our time and connecting communities through that.
I know you just got to Montreal, but you were previously in British BC, where you did a lot of work against the Northern Gateway Pipeline. How did that sort of work differ from the march that you're about to take?
Yeah, I never saw anything in my experience to the scale of a 34-day march. I know that they've happened. I know that there's blockades being built. There's tons of different energies. I think in BC, people are aware of the. I don't know if the people are aware of the issues. More people are engaged in the issues. I've seen a lot more interest and knowledge about it. Where Energy East and Line 9, I think people are just starting to come into the understanding of that this is a thing that could really happen. And especially with the approval of Line 9, that people are really like, okay, this is a reality, and we should start doing something about it. I don't know if there's even a big difference other than there's just people mobilizing everywhere in different ways and in different forms.
Yeah, so what has kind of been the reaction when you tell people I'm going on this 34-day march against these pipelines, you know?
Kind of like, you're ridiculous, and how will your legs survive, which is the question I ask myself all the time. But just amazement that there's people doing it, mobilizing, and that it's actually coming along, and that we're really going to be able to do it. I think there was a lot of people like, they're not going to be able to do 34 days. How? And I think the fact that it's happening in 2 weeks, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I think most people are shocked at the length for the most part, more than anything. But I think that's kind of our shock value and why people are paying more attention to the march.
You know, this isn't just about tar sands or pipelines. Line 9 almost seems to be the tip of the iceberg in terms of the history behind environmental degradation in Canada and at the hands of energy companies. How have you all seen environmental activism evolve in this country, and where do you see the movement going?
Well, I think all these projects are actually very interesting to create mobilization on the ground. This is like the march is one example how everybody's coming together, and this is just great to see people coming together and this movement growing. And stuff like the march is great to for empowerment of communities and for people to actually come together and have their voice heard and think that, yeah, we should be heard. Like, most these big projects of pipelines don't really take into consideration the people that are most affected, so the people that should actually be heard. And we're trying to inverse the tendency and make sure that those people are being heard. So I think that's one great thing that comes from the mobilization.
And for sure, what we are seeing here in Quebec, it's the beginning of something. Like, we've seen a citizen group that has been created, like La Coalition Vigilance Oléoduc, and I think we have 6 Stop Oléoduc or Stop Pipeline groups in different regions in Quebec, and those groups are quite young, and they do learn to work together, and we also as NGO learn to work with citizen group. But we have seen previous mobilization in Quebec, for instance on shale gas. Like, there was over 100 different citizen committee or citizen group around around the whole province. And now I think it will be the same with Energy East, which is the Trans-Canada pipeline. This pipeline will go through Quebec. That will be tar sand oil, the dirtiest oil on earth, from Alberta, sent to New Brunswick, and the bulk, the majority of this oil, almost everything will be sent in China, in India, in Europe. So this is an export pipeline. There's no job for Quebecers in it. There's nothing for local communities. It's all risk, no rewards for the communities. All the benefits will be for the oil company that will allow the expansion of the tar sands. That will be a catastrophe in terms of climate change just for this pipeline. One pipeline, it's 1.1 million barrels per day. This is three times the consumption of Quebec in terms of oil. Just to produce that oil, that will be the equivalent of adding 7 million cars in Canada. So 7 million cars in terms of pollution, in terms of GHG, will be added to Canada if we let that pipeline go. And people start to get it. They know where Harper is sitting. They know we've been quitting Kyoto Protocol. They know Harper dismantled the environmental protection in order to allow the expansion of the tar sand, the fast expansion and approval of pipeline. And people has been shut down from that public conversation. Now people, we have nothing left then standing up, getting together, and blocking those projects as they have done on the West Coast, mm-hmm. in the U.S. And in the U.S., it's the biggest demo they never had on climate was on the Keystone XL pipeline. So I'm sure it will come in Quebec, but we need to act quickly because the federal government now did put a firm deadline of 15 months that will probably start this summer for the approval of this pipeline. So we don't have the same type of amount of time that they had in the West. It's been for 5 years, the mobilization in BC. So in Quebec, it's important to have marches, to have demo for sure, but we'll need to run and to make sure that mobilization happens quickly.
So one final takeaway, Audrey. What do you see, or what do you want people to take away from this conversation? People who don't necessarily have experience with environmental activism, you know, how should they respond to these sorts of pipelines?
Well, one thing is to be aware. I think this is the most important thing. And then when you're aware of the issue, and then people connect of, okay, why do they personally feel affected, and why do they personally care about this issue, then they can find the way to make a difference. There's not everybody will walk a 30-day walk, but they can definitely write a letter to their councillor. They can go see the municipal council and ask for a resolution against the pipeline, or they can organize a small protest or just a discussion in their community for people to be aware. There's been conference for farmers for them to know about their rights when their line is being crossed by the pipeline. There's a lot of different ways that people can be involved, and it's just a way to find how personally someone can participate in that movement. And I think that's the one message that people could take home, is that everybody can contribute in a way in this movement.
Great. So that marks the conclusion of our discussion surrounding Peoples of Mother Earth March and pipelines and tar sands and the environmental movement that's gone on in Canada. I want to thank our panelists, and joining us from the phone was Vanessa Gray. We also have Patrick Bonin, Audrey Yank, and Jesse Kerr. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're about to take a quick break.